The following is a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO, Licensed Insolvency Trustees. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO on VOCM.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Your Money with BDO's Nancy Snedden. I am Nancy Snedden. Thanks so much for tuning in today. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the gig economy. So more and more Canadians are turning to freelance and contract work. While this employment comes with benefits, it also has its challenges. One of them is managing your money when income is sporadic. So I'm joined today by Canada's most recognized voice when it comes to things all personal finance and money. He has a website, moneywehave.com. That is a popular source when it comes to personal financial management. He himself is a personal finance expert, consultant, public speaker, blogger, and freelance writer and contributor to many media sources, including the Globe and Mail, Money Sense, and the Toronto Star, just to name a few. Barry Choi, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So Barry, I know you've been doing some freelance work yourself. You've got a lot of experience in this area, and you're going to have a lot of great tips and tricks for our guests today. But before we get into all that, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of your own background and what got you into this type of work?
Yeah, so I actually worked in television for almost two decades. And I don't know if people are familiar with television, but when I entered the business in the early 2000s, late 90s, it was a booming industry. And then over the years, automation and then, you know, viewers went down and a lot of jobs started to get lost. And I started to think about, like, my job is not necessarily secure. But as life happened, family actually was the real reason I decided to go freelance. Because my wife and I, we had a child and I was working 3 to midnight and I just couldn't get home at 1 a.m. and be up at 6 a.m. anymore. And I decided, hey, you know what, if I'm going to be able to see my family growing up or my daughter growing up, I got to make some adjustments. So I started to think about things I could freelance in. I had a passion for money, so I started writing about it, started a blog. And I was fortunate enough to have some success and then turned into a full-time freelance gig.
You know, that's great. I mean, traditionally, I think 85% or so of Canadians' workforce has consisted of people who are actually employed. But there was a recent study that was done by Bank of Montreal that says that 45% of Canada's workforce is going to be an on-demand or more freelance type of work by 2020. So that seems like a very high percentage to me. Does that surprise you at all?
It did when I first saw the survey results. But when I started to think about it, it kind of started to make more sense. You know, the cost of living in Canada has gone up significantly. Real estate, like a lot of people in the major cities are starting to struggle. And obviously there's new immigrants too who are looking for ways to get ahead. And more importantly, there's just more ways to freelance and enter the gig economy these days. You know, I'm a writer, but, you know, you could be an Uber driver. That's a side gig, right? Or even some people have full-time jobs and they'll bartend at night or, you know, they've got their skills such they can freelance. For me, it's just like people want to earn more money and they realize that it's a lot harder these days. And unfortunately, that full-time job may not be enough to give them that lifestyle that they want.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I think a lot of people listening might think, well, that's the millennial generation that are looking for side gigs and, you know, hustles and things that they can make extra income on. But interesting to me from the survey was that 54% of boomers actually voluntarily made the choice to become self-employed and be more of a freelance contract employee versus be employed by a full-time job. And again, that was a voluntary choice. It wasn't someone that, you know, has been downsized and lost their employment. So it's not just millennials. Certainly a high percentage of millennials are doing this as well as Gen Xers, but I think it spans all generations.
Oh, it's true. You know, it's funny. I'm kind of in the middle there. I'm closer to 40 than I'm closer to 30. So I've kind of seen it from both ends. Some of my older colleagues who are deciding to take the early retirement. You know, I think part of it's the salaries aren't the same. And an older generation is like, hey, you know, if I can take the buyout now and work a little less, you know, work freelance, but I still got this pension, I've got savings, it's an okay gig. And for the people like boomers who are retired or entering retirement, sometimes it's just a matter of like keeping themselves occupied. You know, my dad retired for a few years ago, and to be honest, I'd love it if he took a side gig just so he'd be annoying me a little less.
That is certainly a reason that people are doing it from that older generation is because, you know, many Canadians haven't been able to prepare properly for retirement, whether it's because they were carrying a lot of debt and couldn't put as much away, or, you know, for some it was a financial literacy thing where it wasn't, you know, well thought out and well planned and kind of thought that they'd have a better pension from, you know, CPP and OAS and that kind of thing. But many find themselves in the position where they do retire and they do need to take on a side gig. And I think the the survey did address that as well. And only way to make additional income for boomers was 35% of them said that that was why, because they really needed that additional income.
Yeah, and I think for some boomers also, it's very difficult because they see their kids are growing up, whereas when they were in their early 20s, they were easily able to afford homes and get good-paying jobs now. So I think a lot of them are actually transferring their wealth to their kids to help them get ahead, but at the same time, by doing so, they're actually sacrificing their own retirement. And then they're like, you know what, I actually need the more money. So maybe they're staying in the workforce a little bit longer, taking side gigs. And it's just interesting. You know how it is. Parents will do anything for their kids, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we have had whole shows on that exact topic, actually, talking about what we call the sandwich generation, where people are supporting aging parents but also supporting kids and not really considering what they're going to need themselves as they become the aging parent. So it's definitely
true. So many things in play that people need to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. So the top four reasons that were cited in the survey were 49% of all ages, having autonomy and control was most important to them. So I guess having control of their own work schedule and saying when they're going to work and when they're not going to work. And I know that can be an advantage and a disadvantage. But did that play into your thought process at all? I guess family was the main reason, but a part of it was being able to pick the time you're going to work, I guess.
The reason I'm laughing is because every person who goes freelance thinks to themselves, I'm going to be able to do whatever I want. You know what I mean? I'm going to work from 9 a.m. to noon and call it quits for the rest of the day. But that's just, in reality, it doesn't happen. So I always joke, it's like, I don't get paid to take meetings anymore. I don't get paid to write emails. As a freelancer, I'm constantly hustling, looking for that work. Or even like I mentioned, I've got a family. So on the days where I'll be like, you know what, I'm going to call it at a day at 3 o'clock. I've had enough work. I've done a good job. And then at 3:30, I'm like, oh, I got to clean the condo. I got to start getting dinner. So there's always work going on to a certain extent. So yes, it's true. You get to control your schedule to a certain extent, but at the same time, depending on what you do, you kind of need to figure out, you got to really get your time better is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I guess the better you are and the more contract work you have, I guess it becomes easier to control your own work schedule. But I guess for someone starting out as a freelancer, their workday is not always going to be able to be dictated by them because they need to go where the work is when it is. But please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to manage your finances when you do have that fluctuating income as a freelancer. We'll be right back.
Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money with BDO here on VOCM. I'm Nancy Snedden, Licensed Insolvency Trustee with BDO Canada here in Newfoundland and Labrador. So today's topic is the gig economy, and some people would refer to it as freelancing or a side hustle. But here to talk about this with me today is Barry Choi. Barry's website, moneywehave.com, is a popular source for many when it comes to personal finance management. I encourage our listeners actually to check it out. There's lots of great advice there. But Barry, I'd like to turn to you now to tell people about how they should be organized their finances when you're a freelancer, because your income is not always consistent. You need to think about, when you might have slower months. And I think for people in Newfoundland, this advice will apply as well to many, because we have a lot of people who are seasonally employed. So the same kind of rule of thumb on how to budget properly, making sure you're covering your expenses in slower times will apply to them as well. So what advice do you have for people when it comes to that?
So regardless if you're like a freelancer or employed full-time, many people have heard of an emergency fund. So when I was full-time employed, I had it about 3 months. And if people aren't familiar with that, basically, I had that money topped up just in case of health issues, job loss, or emergency repairs to my home, just so I wouldn't have to dip into my line of credit for whatever reason. But when I decided that I was going to pursue freelancing, what I started to do is I started to slowly up that to 6 months. It sounds crazy to, save 6 months of your expenses, but I'm a little bit of risk averse, so those are one of those things I wanted to do. But as far as managing your expenses on a month-to-month basis, it can be tricky, but obviously you need to have a budget. Everyone knows what their fixed expenses are every single month, so you kind of need to know this is your bottom line. If I make at least this much money, I'm good for the month. And that being said, if you know some months where you won't, that just means you got to save a little bit more for the months where you are making more money.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, I don't think it's crazy at all to say that you should have 6 months of expenses put away. I actually tell clients 6 months up to even 12 months is recommended, because you never know when things are going to take a downturn and you want to make sure you're prepared for that. So to the, I mean, 6 months is great, but I would even say up to 12. I think 3 months can go away very, very quickly. So
Yeah. And it's true. It's like it's other steps too. One of my big concerns when I started freelance is my main client represented 60% of my income. And I was like, if I lose this client, I'm done. It's looking great right now, but at any second I could lose this client. And you know how it is when you're freelancing. You're thinking you've got a great client. They're not going anywhere. But then all of a sudden you have no idea what their business practices are, or maybe they decide to go in-house and not hire freelancers. And so basically what I'm getting is you should try to diversify as best you can. Try to get multiple streams of income. Maybe that means multiple side gigs. It does require more time management, I guess, and accounting. But to me, that's the safer bet.
So when people are starting out, or if people are thinking, you know what, I think that I do want to earn some extra money. So whether it's to be in addition to their employment, full-time or part-time employment, or if it's something that they want to do full-time themselves, what is the first steps that they should consider in putting together a financial plan for themselves?
Well, with financial plan first is, you know, you got to figure out how are you going to actually make this succeed. So you got to look at the skills you have and can people actually pay you for them, right?
Yeah.
Or what kind of freelance gig are you thinking? And is it realistic to go full-time into it? I started as a part-time freelancer before I decided to go full-time. And then it was really difficult to make that jump. And part of it was because my daughter was born. You know, for someone who's had a career and is making X amount of dollars, you know, if you go full-time freelance, you might be taking a 50% pay cut, if not more. Are you ready for that? And obviously things like if you've got a family, you got to consider about your overall expenses, benefits. If you got a spouse that you can kind of float you for a little bit, that's good too. So there's so many things to look at. And budgeting, and obviously, is the most important thing.
You know, for sure. And it's interesting you say that about a spouse, because one of the articles I was reading recommended actually that before you go into freelancing, you look and see, could you sustain your living expenses, like the main things that you had to pay, you know, your mortgage, your light bill, your groceries, that kind of thing, on just your spouse's income. And if you can't, then maybe you need to look at ways that you can try to fit within that level of income as you're starting out, and let yourself build that emergency fund, build that savings and that kind of thing before you're relying on your freelance as a source of income.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's funny enough you talk about relying on one income. My mother taught me, like when I was about to get married and buy a house, my mother always said, hey, make sure whatever you purchase or whatever you do, if you can live on one salary in case of an emergency or whatever, you're probably going to do just fine. It's obviously very difficult these days with the cost of real estate, but when my wife and I, when I told her I was wanting to go freelance, is exactly what we did. We looked at her income, we looked at her benefits. So right away I was like, okay, I don't need benefits because you've got benefits. So that helps me in one regard. And then we looked at overall, is like, you know, I knew right away at the beginning there's going to be a few months where I'm starting to build this, so I'm going to rely on you. And we had that emergency fund kind of as a buffer, which I'd already built. So obviously if you've got a spouse, it helps you quite a bit. But if you're single, living on your own, it can be a difficult decision because you really got to consider is like, how is this change going to affect your finances?
For sure. And it is a big consideration for everyone. We're going to talk a lot more about that and the steps that people should take to make sure their finances are organized when we return. We'll be right back.
Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back to Your Money here on VOCM. I'm Nancy Snedden. I'm joined today by Barry Chow. Barry has a website, moneywehave.com, and is a personal finance management expert. So, Barry, we're talking today about the gig economy and freelancing, and you've been doing it for many years successfully. So, for people who are starting out, I guess one of the main considerations that they look at is, should they be just including all this as their own income? Should they incorporate? What's your recommendation there?
You know, it's really tricky. It depends on how you want to set up your business. Without going into too many details, you know, if you incorporate, it gives you a little bit more protection from a legal standpoint. It gives you some tax benefits. But then you got to figure out things like paying yourself dividends or, you know, getting that income. Sometimes it's a little bit easier to just do it personally and just report that income on the side when it comes to tax time. So, you know, you really can't go wrong either way. You just got to realize there's different tax considerations for which route you go.
Yeah, and I guess depending on the level of income you're going to be earning and the type of business that you're in, you just want to seek the advice of a professional to say, what should I do and what are the pitfalls if I choose one or over the other, to make sure you're getting good advice and making the right decisions up front.
That's exactly it. A lot of people jump into freelancing, and sometimes they do well right away. You know, they make a little bit more than they thought they would, and then they're not sure what they should do when it comes to accounting purposes. I actually sought out the advice from an accountant right away. Fortunately, I had a family friend who was an accountant, so I just asked him some general questions, and he gave me some advice, and I was like, you know what, for you, it's probably just better to do it personally. And then as I started to scale up, then I actually hired an accountant to help me manage things, or more importantly, I just needed a trusted person that I could seek out advice whenever I needed it.
That's right. So I guess regardless of which way you choose to go, whether it's going to be a sole proprietor or incorporation, it's still important to make sure that you're separating your business expenses from your personal expenses.
Yeah, exactly. So people, once they start freelancing, they realize that they can, you know, claim expenses, but they're often confused, like you said, what's personal and what's business. So one good example is, you know, in my condo, I use about 50% of my internet bill for my freelance income. So that means I can claim 50% for taxes. So another good example is mileage. You know, if I'm using 10% of my gas for work for my freelance related items, then I can expense that. I can't claim the 90%. Anything that's personal, you cannot claim. And more importantly, I have all the receipts to back it up. You know, people often forget that you got to have evidence of this in case you are audited by the CRA.
Yeah, no, that's right. And a lot of people do forget that because everything is filed electronically these days, and you know, you're not stapling. You know, I can remember when I first started in my career, and I was preparing personal taxes, and we had these humongous staplers that we would have to staple together all the backup to the returns and mail them in. I'm probably dating myself a little bit there, but that's no longer the case. So people forget sometimes. I think that Revenue Canada can come knocking at any time and ask for every receipt that you've claimed on your return. So it is super important. Something else that I was reading, Barry, and I thought it was a really good idea actually, was to set up, you know, 3 or 4 bank accounts so that you have, you know, one that you're using for your business operating account, one that's your personal bank account, one that you're putting aside your savings or emergency fund, and another then that you're putting away the money that you are going to need to pay Revenue Canada, whether it's for GST or for taxes.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea, and I've been encouraging people to do that for years. The nice thing is now with digital banks, you can actually set up 5-10 different accounts within the same account, same bank, financial institution for that matter. So it's actually really easy to manage your expenses. So whenever I get paid by a client, it goes to a general account first, right? And then I immediately transfer anywhere from 25 to 50% of what I got paid for taxes. I'm giving that range just so people will probably talk about this later. Like, depending on your tax bracket, if you've got GST or HST, you got to set aside some separate money. And anything personal money, like my own emergency fund. My wife even, we have a vacation fund. We have a car maintenance fund. So we always like to have these separate accounts so we can see where our money is going. And if something, if one account starts to get a little light, we can just have that conversation, be like, hey, we might need to top this up, or maybe we've got to cut back on certain things so we're not spending as much money.
Yeah, and I think it's important. We'll get into the tax consequences in a later segment, but you know, having that account set up where you're putting that money aside that you know you're going to pay, that should really be your untouchable account, because you don't want to find yourself in the position where that's the account that you're dipping into for other things and find that you now have a big tax bill at the end that you can't pay, because that can get quite expensive for you.
My accountant jokes that that his number one referral is to bankruptcy trustees, because often freelancers forget to save for taxes, and then they get a bill for $30,000 and they've got no money to pay it off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I encourage people, like I have clients that probably are people like your accountant are referring to me, and you know, they often, that is the first money that they spend kind of thing. So what I often tell them is, you know, even if you're someone who has to file annually, make quarterly or monthly remittances anyway, so that money is gone and it's not available there to dip into, and sort of the temptation is gone from being able to do that. And that does work better for a lot of people, because, you know, if it's not there, it's inaccessible, then that's obviously better for them. So do you have any advice for people on, you know, maybe apps or softwares or anything that's worked for you on how to track your expenses?
Yeah, one popular app is QuickBooks Self-Employed. I don't remember the cost of it. It's rather inexpensive, but they got a few fun features. You know, you can basically link it to your bank accounts, and you can swipe right or swipe left depending on if it's a personal expense or a business expense. So that's a nice thing. It's also got a mileage tracker, which obviously helps people who might be driving often as part of their freelance gig. Funny enough, I actually like good old Excel. Right? Whenever I get a receipt, I have different tabs. I log everything, and then I take my receipts and I just put it in one of those plastic binders with everything separated, so I can kind of see where everything's going. Not everyone is into that, but there's just so many other apps, or even for invoicing, you know, there's FreshBooks. There's so many different options out there.
Yeah, I guess find the one that works for you. The main thing is find something that works so you're not just struggling at tax time to try to figure out what should be where and what you should be claiming. Well, please stay with us. Speaking of tax time, we're going to talk about what you should be considering as a freelancer when it comes to filing your taxes. Please stay with us.
Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back to Your Money. I'm Nancy Snedden. My guest today is personal finance expert, consultant, public speaker, blogger, and freelance writer, Barry Choi. Barry has a website, moneywehave.com, and we're talking with him today about freelancing, you know, the gig economy and the things that you need to consider if that's something that you're looking at doing or are currently doing for that matter. So Barry, one of the big things that comes up for people who are freelancing, whether it's their sole source of income or an additional source of income, is how and when and what they should be reporting to Revenue Canada. So what advice do you have to them on that?
Yeah, I think the number one question for me, people will right away, is like, how much should be setting aside? Do I need to register for a GST or HST number? So generally speaking, if you're just getting into freelancing, I say a minimum of 25%. So if you make $1,000 right away, set aside $250 for taxes. But it obviously depends on your tax bracket. So you kind of need to look at where you fall. So if all of a sudden, you know, I'm making this number up, you're in a 30% tax bracket, you got to start setting aside 30%. But if you got a GST number, then you got to add 13%, and all of a sudden you're saving 43%. It sounds like a lot, and people are like, I never got taxed this much when I was a full-time employee. It's like, well, technically you did, but it was just taken off at the source. You just never noticed
it. You never noticed it, that's right.
Yeah. So for me, people really got to be diligent about that. We talked about having multiple accounts earlier. So when you deposit that check, or if it goes right into your account, immediately go home, log into your online banking, and transfer your tax money aside right away. So once it's out of that account, you won't be tempted to spend it. Just don't dip into that tax account, as we spoke about earlier.
And are there different tax filing deadlines for people when they're freelancers?
Yeah, I believe, you know, I don't remember off the top of my head, but self-employed individuals need to file a little bit earlier. And I think it comes more down to the payment. Like when I owed money as a freelancer, which is pretty common, and I had to pay it off at the end of April. See, the funny thing is we had done our filing, and I just waited till last week because I was just behind this year. And I thought I had paid enough HST and taxes, but it turns out I was short $50, just a mistake on my end. And then I got a statement later from Sarah, like, oh, you're already, you know, you already owe 11 cents of interest. So what I'm getting at is you really need to be on top of your deadlines. It was my own fault. I knew it was coming. I just, you know, forgot. I didn't get my account in one piece of paper and then went away on vacation. You just kind of forget about it. And some other things that people forget is they actually get afraid to file taxes if they know that, oh, but you should always file by the deadline because CRA, the interest that they charge is actually pretty reasonable. I think it's 1% for a month and it caps all that 12%, which is significantly lower than a credit card interest rate when you think about it. You kind of know your deadlines.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I agree with you. I always tell people, regardless if you have the money to pay what you're going to owe, you still need to get the filing because although you'll get interest on what's not paid, you won't get a penalty on top of that.
Exactly.
If it's filed on time.
Right?
So always important to file regardless. But obviously, best practice is to have that money sitting in the account, as we said, to make sure you can pay it on time. So does everyone have to charge HST, Barry, if they're freelancing?
Well, technically, no. The way it works is once you've reached $30,000 in income, and to be clear, this is just a freelance income. So it doesn't matter if you've got a full-time job. We're just talking about freelance income. Then you immediately need to register for an HST number. The thing is, people don't realize the government isn't tracking your freelance income. They don't know if you've made $30,000, but it's up to you to register as soon as you hit that threshold. And after you hit that threshold, you have to charge it moving forward regardless. But then it gets a little bit complicated. HST is only charged to people with a base in Canada, right? So you've got U.S. clients or international clients, you don't charge them HST, but it still counts as your income. You still got to report income. So it starts to get things a little bit more complicated. But, you know, the CRA understands, and if you can prove and show that these are clients that are international, hence why I'm not charging HST, they don't care, right?
Yeah, and I guess if you're not sure, again, best practice, reach out to a professional who can advise you properly.
And a lot of self-employed people, they typically try to do everything themselves because they want to save money and understand that. But sometimes when you hire a professional, the fees you pay them actually ends up saving you money. Because they can give you, with an accountant, my accountant gives me advice on, hey, you know, you could save money by doing this and this and that. You know, make sure you're saving these receipts, do this. To me, I think he's paid for himself. It's worth the trouble. And again, we spoke about this earlier. Just having access to a professional that you can ask at any time instead of spending, you know, 10 hours going through blogs. Like, yeah, I try to give the most accurate information. But at the same time, I would still trust my accountant over me any day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we talked in the last segment about making sure you're tracking your expenses and separating personal from business. But what types of things should people be ensuring they're keeping track of from a business perspective that are actually going to be a deduction for them for tax purposes?
The most common things, home office, utilities if you have a home office, cell phone plans, internet, gas, we talked about. I write about travel. I also travel for work, so there are some travel expenses. But the biggest one people probably have heard about is meals and entertainment. So if you're entertaining a client or you're having a meeting that relates to business, you can claim 50% of that. So you got to make sure you're hanging on those receipts. That can be a big expense come the end of the year, depending on the type of freelancing you do.
You know, absolutely. And again, an accountant and even the Revenue Canada website will give you a pretty detailed list of the things that you can claim.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I start to look it up, and then people should really be going to the CRA website on a regular basis. It's actually a terrible website. Like, it's just not pretty.
It's not necessarily user-friendly, but the information is there somewhere.
It's practical. Exactly. You should become very familiar with it. All the resources are there. And you can ask them, and just having your accountant there is also a great resource.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's certainly lots to consider when it comes to filing your taxes as a freelancer. But what about other items that you need to think about if that's your sole source of income, like health coverage, retirement, those types of things? We're going to talk about those kinds of benefits when we come back. Please stay with us.
Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back to Your Money here on VOCM. I'm Nancy Snedden, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada here in Newfoundland and Labrador. So we're talking about freelancing today. So whether it's your sole source of income or a side gig to try to make some extra money, there's lots of important considerations. And I'm talking today with Barry Chow. So he's a self-taught personal finance expert, consultant, public speaker, blogger, and freelance writer. He's also the creator of the personal finance website, moneywehave.com. So Barry, I'd like to talk about benefits and retirement and stuff like that for freelancers. I guess more important if it's your sole source of income, but may also be a consideration for those who are employed elsewhere and don't necessarily have access to the same types of benefits that all employees would have. So there's lots of things to consider, whether it's medical, dental, disability, retirement planning like pensions, RRSPs. So what should people be considering and where should they be looking for these types of benefits?
This one is tricky because as a self-employed individual, sometimes you don't necessarily qualify for certain things. I mean, a good example is when I was full-time employed, obviously I had every single benefit possible. And I'm fortunate that I still have my wife where it gives me, you know, medical and dental. But one thing I don't have is disability insurance. People who aren't familiar with that, they think, hey, but you've got an emergency fund, Barry. You said you got 6 months. What does that matter? Well, what happens if I'm in a long-term accident and I can't actually work at all anymore? Right? So, yeah, once that 6 months is up, I got no more income. And the reason why it's been difficult for me to get disability insurance is just because so many insurance, I guess there's been a lot of fraudulent claims. So even though I'm a writer, I can prove that over the last 3 years, I made X amount of dollars. Unless I've got a big contract that's consistent, which is basically like saying some kind of full-time employment, part-time employment, they won't insure me, which I think is ridiculous. But like I said, I think there's been too many false claims in the past. There are some things I can control. You know, I was able to buy term life insurance policy. I haven't looked into it personally, but I'm sure you can buy a health and dental plan on your own through different companies. So you kind of really need to do your research.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I guess the other thing to consider when you're freelancing and it's your sole source of income is there's no paid sick time. So, you know, if you get sick, you're either going to trudge through and make sure you get your work done, or you need to make sure you have these benefits in place that are going to help you out if it's even if a short-term sickness sort of thing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, my daughter's in daycare right now, and my wife's like, oh, it's okay if she's sick. You know, you can just watch her at home. I'm like, yeah, that's great, but that means I'm not working for the day.
Yeah, there's always an impact.
So, the freelancer, you really got to manage your time. And like you said, there's no sick days. I remember when I had a full-time job. It's going to sound terrible. Hopefully my old boss isn't listening. I could wake up with the sniffles. I would call in sick. Right? You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not feeling well. But now it's just like, nope, now I just got to power through it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And one of the other important considerations for people is a retirement planning. And I think that's important regardless if you're employed or freelancing. You need to make sure you're saving enough for retirement, because even employed people these days don't have the same level of pension plans as, you know, maybe our parents or grandparents had. Mm-hmm. So saving through RSPs or TFSAs is certainly going to be important for everyone, but it's especially important for freelancers.
Yeah, that's exactly. You hit it bang on there. It's like everyone's got to be aware that retirement savings, it should be a priority. But as a freelancer, I think people are more aware about it. At the same time, it can be tricky because, you know, if you're trying to, like, manage your business and get by through your monthly expenses without going under, thinking about your retirement can be difficult. But that's where those different bank accounts that we've talked about in the past comes into play. You know, you have different accounts, your RSPs, your TFSAs, your emergency funds. Get into the habit of trying to transfer money out as soon as you have it. You know, keep a minimum amount to help your business grow. But think about all those other things that are important to you. You know, paying off your mortgage and your retirement, your TFSA. And more importantly, it's not just about transferring your money to your TFSA and your RRSP. You've got to think about what kind of investments make sense so you'll have the money in the future. You know, mutual funds, ETFs, stocks, whatever it is. You want your money to grow.
You know, absolutely. And I guess the other important consideration, too, for people who may think, well, you know, I'll have access to a government pension, is that you're only going to have access to CPPP if you've paid into it.
Yes, exactly. People got to remember. So this is where accountants great. It's like some people forget that as a self-employed individual, I don't remember exactly, but they just forget to pay in the CPP. Or I don't remember if it's mandatory. Honestly, my accountant takes care of my taxes, so it's probably automatically included. But it can be tricky because what sometimes people, as freelancers do, is, you know, we've been talking about all the honest people right now. And I do believe most people are honest and they report all of their income. But some people tend to, you know, forget certain things to report on under taxes, or they may exaggerate things. And I want to make clear that that's tax fraud and it's not worth the trouble. You know, when you're a full-time employee, you pay your taxes, your fair share taxes. And as a self-employed individual, you should do the same.
Absolutely. And I think oftentimes people think, well, you know, it's cash or there's no record. And I always say, you know what, there's a record somewhere for everything.
That's exactly right? It. Yeah. And it's funny. I remember my younger years, you know, my parents were immigrants. So they're trying to save money. And then you deal with contractors where they're like, hey, cash only deal or certain things. Like, now I've quickly realized as a freelancer, it's like, you know what, it's a good thing to be paying taxes. You know, the more taxes I'm paying, that just means I'm making more money. So to me, it's a good thing. And now I don't actually like dealing with anyone who says cash only, because to me, it's just like, that's a flag to me personally.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll end up costing them more in the end, because, you know, like I said, there is a record of it somewhere along the way. Somehow, if you did ever get caught with not reporting, it's going to cost you a lot more than it would have had you done it.
Not worth the trouble. Exactly.
Not worth the trouble. Well, please stay with us. Barry's had some great advice today. When we come back, we're going to have some time to hear some final thoughts.
Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back to Your Money with BDO. I'm Nancy Snedden. I'd really like to thank my guest today, Barry Choi. We've had some great discussion around freelancing and side hustles and all the things that people need to consider. And Barry, for our listeners now, I'd like you to give them some final thoughts. Like, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you can leave them with today, or something that you just want to reiterate to make sure that it's clear for them?
Yeah, for me, I think people who are thinking about freelancing, you should just do it, right? Test the waters. I'm not saying quit your job right away, but it's kind of amazing how what started as kind of like a hobby for me turns into a full-time job. Although, you know, I admit that I've worked harder than I ever did as a full-time employee. It's giving me so much more. You know, I get to spend more time with the family. I've got a new experience. I met new people. And I know it's difficult, but sometimes you just kind of need to go for it.
Yeah, and I think there's lots of opportunity these days, too, to try out those different things. And even if it's not something you want to do or you think it's something that you're going to do full time, there's lots of ways to earn extra income these days. Like one of my family members actually has a full-time job, but certain times of the year it's a little slower, and he has a lot of commission-based income, so he feels it sometimes during the year. So he started driving for Skip the Dishes, and he loves it. Right, so who knew that he loves being in his car. And, you know, he said, I meet all, you know, people, they're, most people are really nice, and he gets into some conversations. It's not always just to kind of drop the food at the door sort of experience. So he's actually really having a good time, and sometimes his wife will go along with him. Like, so there's lots of opportunities to try different things to earn extra money.
Yeah, and the mentality has changed these days. I feel like, you know, sometimes people would kind of look down at people who are freelancers, like, oh, you can't get a full-time job, or why are you an Uber driver? And I think people certainly understand circumstances that are out today. Like you said, some people just do it for fun. Or, you know what, they're looking for a change right now in their career. They're taking a break, and you're just making some side income for the time being. It doesn't matter what it is. You could be an Uber driver. You could be a part-time server. There's no shame in it whatsoever anymore. So I think just in general, people are so much more open to the gig economy. You know, we talked about the survey results earlier and how up to like, what, 50% by 2020 we'll be doing side gigs. It's true. It's just the reality we live in, and who knows what will happen in 10 years from now, right?
Yeah, and I have some friends too who have said, you know, we want to get our house paid off sooner, or we want to make sure we're saving enough for retirement, or over-saving and compensating for, you know, big emergencies that can come up as well, and thinking about it sooner than maybe some others might. And in order to do that, they're actually actively thinking, what side hustles can I do? Like, what are ways that I can earn extra money? And really putting their head to that as a way to be able to, you know, clear their debt or pay off their mortgage or whatever the case may be. So it doesn't always have to be, I need money to pay my mortgage, period. It can be, I want to be able to get ahead a little of this, and my current income is only allowing me to kind of keep my head above water.
Yeah, and on the flip side of things, for people who are fortunate enough to have already saved, and hey, they've spoken to their financial advisor, and you know, this was actually a big eye-opener for me, and we haven't talked about this, is as a child of an immigrant, it was very difficult for me to quit my full-time job. You know, I was raised to be conservative. You know, I had a defined benefit pension. I had seniority, even though I was always worried about my job. I was in a pretty good position. And to give that all up for nothing sounds crazy. But the reason I did it was I spoke to my financial advisor, a fee-only financial planner. And he basically ran my numbers. He said, Barry, this is what you have saved now. This is what conservatives, they say, this is your rate of return, 3-4% over the next 30 years. If you can make just this amount of money as a freelancer, you and your family will be fine. And I knew I could, so I quit my job right away. But without, you know, kind of running the numbers, I wouldn't have done it. So that's an important thing for people to realize. Sometimes, you know what, you may already be ahead of where you think you are, and just going a side gig might be all you need.
Yeah, that's right. It might just give you that extra cushion. And for a lot of people, they enjoy it. It's not, you know, additional time that's spent away from the family, or, you know, a kind of a pain for them to have to do. A lot of people enjoy it, and that's what I would tell people. Find something that you're going to enjoy, not something that's just going to be a headache for you, because that's probably not gonna last.
Yeah, it's true. These things can be very rewarding. You know, I started off just writing things on the blog, and then as my reputation grew, I've had these great opportunities to help people and educate people. And that's great. You know, people who are listening, like I started off working in television. Now I've basically switched careers to spend more time with my family. It's possible. You just got to invest in yourself a little bit to begin with, and have the confidence to believe in yourself.
Yeah, and I guess make sure you're getting the right advice for things you're not an expert in yourself, like retirement planning, like accounting and taxes and all that good stuff that we talked about.
Yeah, and more importantly, you want to be smart about what kind of freelancing you do. Unfortunately, there's a lot of companies out there and a lot of scams who make it seem like you could get rich quickly, or if you do this and that, it's great passive income. But it might actually end up costing you a lot of money, because you may have to buy product, you may have to do tests. So it always helps to do a little bit of research and thinking about what kind of freelancing you're going to be doing. And is it actually something that will make you money, or something that you'll actually enjoy?
Yeah, and I think, to that point, Barry, the old adage holds true. If it sounds too good to be true, it likely is.
It's true. That is 100% true.
So, again, thanks for joining me today. It's been some really great discussion. I know our listeners may have more questions, may want to get some more advice or see what might be on your website. So if they wanted to reach out, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, they can reach out to my website, moneywehave.com. I got a contact form there. And you can also reach out to me on Twitter, @BarryChoy.
Great. Well, thanks again for joining me today, Barry. It's really been great.
Thank you so much for having me.
So as always, I do want to hear from you, my listeners. If you have a comment or question or maybe a topic you'd like me to discuss here on Your Money, you can email me at yourmoney@bdo.ca or you can give me a call at 800-563-8337. Until next week, I'm Nancy Snedden. Thanks so much for tuning in.
If you have a question or comment for Your Money, send an email to yourmoney@bdo.ca. This has been Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO, Licensed Insolvency Trustees. On VOCM.
The proceeding was a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.